Let's just set our motivation. So settling our posture so we're comfortable, our spine is straight, but our body is relaxed. Make sure that your shoulders are pulled back so that your breathing is not restricted. And then as your posture settles, bringing your focus inwards, just becoming aware of the rising and falling of the breath. And as our mind begins to settle and become focused, we can recognize how fortunate we are. We are the lucky ones to have found this shelter in the storm, an incredible refuge. And while we have this shelter, so few have the same opportunity, either because they're distracted. They're in other parts of the world. They're in other realms. So we really owe it to everybody to be able to make the most of our own opportunity so we can help all sentient beings. So contemplating His Holiness's bodhicitta prayer with the wish to free all beings, we shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until we reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, we generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may we too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, so with that motivation, let's see how we are going. How's the momentum going?
Hasn't stopped.
Hasn't stopped. Part of the daily routine. I'm so envious.
I'm still going. I'm still going through the daily the book, the year book. Today finishes Precious Human Rebirth. That was the last, and tomorrow starts Impermanence.
Very timely. Right, so you do one of those a day. Third attempt is stuck with it. And so you do this with the Vajrasattva mantras?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the ingredient. Yeah, so with the yellow booklet, that's like just the bare minimum. But if you're doing something as well, then yes, you can mix and match for sure. Yeah, I was looking at my count today thinking I've got to find a better way to do this because I'm not blitzing it like Geshe-la wanted us to blitz it. Yep, 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there
Not
and
5 minutes on.
shower, waiting, queues. Yeah, so I found the days that I go out and catch a bus, then I blitz it, and the days that I stay home and do all my LTC work. Were you here when Geshe Sultram, someone asked Geshe-la on Sunday about if you listen to the recording of the practice, is that counted as doing the practice? And so it's counted as listening to the practice, but it's not counted as reciting the practice. So if you've got a commitment to recite this sadhana or that sadhana, then just listening to it isn't reciting it. But if you could recite along with it, like a memory prompt, then
Right,
that works.
read it.
Yeah, that's right. Or yeah, like you just need to get started with the first line of each sentence, each paragraph, and you know what comes.
Miffy, that it makes my 8,000 look ugh. But anyway, I just do the bare minimum because I'm still trying to finish my refuge nondros. I struggle with doing any recitations when I'm anywhere else other than sitting down in my room because I don't think I'd be able to sort of be focused on doing it. To me, if I was doing it that way, I'd just need to be sitting down and dedicating that. You know, if I'm driving, I end up saying some other mantra and I'm not conscious, I
Yeah.
can't focus.
I think you're doing pretty well because I actually went backwards because I was doing my intermediate six session at the gym and but because I'm competing with the music that's coming in and the music has words, I've stuffed up the order of the verses and now I can't actually say the verses and I've been reciting them for years. When I'm watering the garden or whatever, and now they're just all jumbled up, and I've missed a line there and a thing here, and I'm like, oh no, I have to stop. So I can do short mantras at the gym, and they're really good because I'm super focused on them. No way can I do Vajrasattva mantras at the gym because I get three quarters of the way through and some word from some song comes in. I'm like, where am I?
When we were in Nepal, I started with saying a lot of prayers while we were trekking. And so now when I come home from work, I'll go for a walk after work and I'll say the beginning of the sadhana where I've got Vajrasattva above my head, and then we go for a walk. And I'm the opposite to friend. I can't sit down and say them. I get too distracted and too bored. But if I'm walking, I can walk indefinitely, you know. On the days when I go for my walk, I do pretty well. You know, I might get two done.
Because there's a good rhythm for walking with Vajrasattva. That
That's
one,
great.
yeah, that works very, very nicely. But that's what I try and do on the bus, of have complete equanimity, and no, so I notice my responses coming up, and then try and have the equanimity, and then have the bodhicitta for everybody, and then bathe them in a shower of Vajrasattva light. We get to practice without the complication of having to talk to these people, because once you talk to people, it's suddenly you're involved again. But like that, yeah, you get practice with actual living beings in front of you, which is great. I'm just loving it, really loving it. I'm trying to get into the swing of starting early in the morning. Before I even get out of bed, before I make tea, to sit up in bed, do a little focus practice, and do my Vajrasattva practice, and do about 15 minutes of recitation. And what's even better is, I complained about how small the print is in the booklet. So that's made me memorize it now so that I can put the light on.
I'm a bit behind everybody. I like Francesca. I'm just still completing my refuge nondro. I'm almost there, but I had to start again. I had some surgery and I tried to keep it up, but there was just one day where I was so tired and painkillers and I completely forgot. So I have had to start again, but I do try to do the short practice in the morning, and then I can add on to it throughout the day. So I'm at back up to about 5,000.
In the end, the numbers don't mean anything, do they?
That's
But
it.
it's
It's
just a
about
way of telling how involved we are, I suppose. And also because it'll be a really nice thing to be able to offer Geshe-la too, because the thing that extends the life of our gurus and makes sure that they're healthy is the offering of practice. It's good to hear how there's quite a range of what people are up to and to feel okay about where we're up to. I think we've
Good.
kind of split into the 40, 50,000 and 5, 6,000, but that's okay. I was just wondering like how everybody's energy was going with this practice because it's quite long and extended now. I haven't found it as easy to like you were saying, Dean, of just every moment take, I can do that, but the quality that was there for the refuge nondro, I'm way more struggling with the Vajrasattva nondro. And that's, I think, because it's about purification. Purification's hard. It's got a whole different flavor to it. So that is fantastic discipline to be able to have 40 minutes to an hour in the mornings. That's just really amazing. So I take my hat off to you. So we've been going through body, speech, and mind. And so this month has been about the purification of the mind. So I was thinking, well, what is the angle on this that's different? And of course, it's about how we first experience things isn't how they actually are, like the appearances or the first experience. So, for instance, exhaustion. That exhaustion, because I've also been so tired, and mentally came to a just came to a stop, ground to a halt. And I was thinking, actually, the exhaustion doesn't come from the body or the time or the effort that you put in. The exhaustion comes from the mind. And not to gaslight about exhaustion, but I've managed to identify that feeling exhausted comes when you hit a barrier or a resistance. And what happens is we maybe are not aware of what that barrier or resistance is. So we go, I'm too tired. Or maybe we go, I need a break. And we think it's because of exhaustion. And so then we stop or whatever, or we don't want to do it anymore. And actually, what we've hit is a resistance, and it might be a resistance to the way we're thinking about the practice. Because remember, just recently there was that family that got lost out at sea, and the teenage boy, the 14-year-old, swam 4 kilometers or whatever in to get help, and then got to the beach and then ran another however many kilometers to get the phone to call. And he was so wrecked after that that he was on crutches for like a week and a bit afterwards because his legs didn't work anymore. And in one of the interviews, I asked him, like, what did you think about when you were swimming? And he said, I just thought about how much I love my friends and how much I wanted to help my family. And I just thought about how fantastic my friends were, and that's what kept me going. I just thought, oh man, so this kid, he's got it. And so that's the thing. That's what goes. It's the mind that pushes through exhaustion so so he didn't have that resistance with the exhaustion. And what got him through the resistance was love. So I've been looking back at my own times now where I've been exhausted and couldn't push through. And it's been because I've hit something where I'm resisting, and usually it's because I'm not being honest or authentic. There's something that's happened that I haven't dealt with, or there's something that's come up that I'm ignoring, or something actually has gone wrong, and I'm just thinking I can go along in the same way. So in a way, the resistance comes up to show you, stop, pause, have a look here. But that's not what we do. We go, oh, I'm too tired. And so the bad days when you have the resistance, it's like, so in this way of purifying the mind, it's like that's a conventional reality, but it's not the truth. It's not real. We've got to look into it. Working with the resistance differently, if you only do 21, but they're really good quality mantras rather than like 100. So you have this momentum, and I think this was what I was saying to Stacey last time that she was here, that she had this really fantastic momentum right at the beginning, and then you hit a resistance, you get tired, but it's because you have to change your approach. So when you get tired, it's not like, no, I don't want to do it anymore, which is, we fall off the wagon. It's really easy to fall off the wagon. So then it's finding a different way to approach it. It's a weird way of giving yourself a pep talk, but it's kind of made me feel much happier because it's like the key is to find the way through the resistance until you hit on where the actual problem was. Look at the problem, and then you're back to loving the practice again, even if you are tired, which is how most of the time I can, most of the time I can be tired and keep my mind happy. The exhaustion or the resistance that comes from exhaustion. That it's not the thing that makes us exhausted, but it's our response to the thing that makes us exhausted. Of course, like Lamzo Rinpoche would say, just bodhicitta fixes everything. Just remember bodhicitta, which is, joyous and happy and everything, and it'll connect you back again. So that was one thing with the mind. So exhaustion, kind of as a feeling. The other one that I was thinking about was fear or dread. So for all of the women here, there is a thing that happens in is it pre-perimenopause and menopause where you have overwhelming feelings of dread, and it's a physiological thing, and it goes for a couple of years. There's another time where you get physiological experience of dread, and it's much shorter, and you'll see it on Bondi rescues when you get bit by jellyfish, the box jellyfish. With the jellyfish sting, physiologically, they have a toxin that they release that causes an absolutely deep-seated existential dread. And it lasts for several minutes. And it's a physiological thing. So that's this external kind of, condition that causes this absolutely to the bottom of your boots feeling of not just fear, but absolute dread. And so, funnily enough, menopause does this too. And so, of course, then you think, oh, dread, it's a bad feeling, therefore it's bad, therefore let's try and get rid of it. But I was thinking with this also, it's a completely different thing, that actually it's a bad feeling, but it's very good, because you're getting to the time of life where you've got to actually start thinking, what am I doing with my life? Time is overing, as Geshe Zopa would say. Tick, 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 tick. And what have I done? And what am I focusing on? And it's usually where we have to completely change our focus around. And actually, the dread isn't even exaggerated. It's just showing reality. So that's another one. It's a message, like a pain system. It's a message that's telling us, this is really super crucial to do something. So I think the dread, it tells us about death and impermanence. And it also, we can trace it directly back to self-grasping, because that's the other thing that we have. Any feeling of fear or dread that we have is there because we have innate self-grasping. So it reveals our self-grasping. And that's where, especially on at menopause, you're changing the whole idea of who you are. Mandy.
I'm going through that at the moment.
Oh, are you?
It's not good.
No, it's not pleasant, but it is good.
It's really heavy in your heart area. They're testing it for other things. Mentally, it's just, yeah, it's the dread of just silly things get in your mind. It wakes me up in the morning.
Absolutely. Do you wake up in a panic?
Yep, every
Yep.
morning for this. This is what's happening here. But in saying that, I get through the days with my practice. Vajrasattva is my, I'll call him my buddy at the moment. So that's the only things that seem to me sensible to me. Plus, I'm also doing Tara twice a day. I'll say this now, I don't know how it's happening, but I'm up to 62,000 because it's just my comfort. To know that I'm going, I'm doing, I'm trying to do all the visualizations deeper now. And someone suggested to me that with the smoke and that to see the smoke as dread and fear leaving the body. And the same with the out downward with the liquid. See it as, I see it as ink from a pen that's red and all that
Ink.
going out. I'm not 100% yet. I'm getting there. My energy's slowly coming back.
There's the external thing happening. You've probably got two things. You've got the actual thing happening with your
Check.
heart that you're having tests for, and then a whole menopause thing, combined. But as we As you've just so beautifully demonstrated, this can be turned into an incredible incentive.
It
It's a
is.
comfort. So we know actually what a valid, legitimate refuge is.
Yeah, because before I was just doing, going through the motions and doing the recitations, but now there's more depth in my recitation. There's more, I've pulled back how many I'm doing a day now because I want that depth. I want to get this cleaned up. And it's, I'm doing it for not just for me, but for everyone out there that's suffering at the moment. I have really bad days pushing through. I nearly gave up. It was very close in the beginning. But I hung on. I really hung
So
on.
this is just like in Yungne's, this is the actual purification, Mandy, where you change your response to suffering. And so that thing of almost giving up but not, that's the purification. Exactly the same thing happens in Yungne's, where you face the difficulty in a completely different way, in a new way. And this is, I think, also why it takes time. And it's also why menopause takes time, because it's not just an intellectual change of mind. It's actually rewiring your entire physiology so it turns into something different. So that instinctually it changes, so that instinctually we can actually kind of align this now with getting rid of self-grasping, and with at least getting rid of grasping at reality. So there's the reality, how it appears, and then there's the grasping at it, which is what makes it terrible and heavy.
Yeah.
And that's, we can't help but do that. And so then you wake up every morning with this panic, utter dread, and complete misery
Yeah.
about life and the prospects of all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Even though intellectually, you know, oh my gosh, I'm the luckiest person in the world because I have a perfect human rebirth and
Yeah.
lama, and you know, all the lamas. But nevertheless, and then it's compounded because physiologically it's also happening. And your
Yeah.
adrenal glands are shot to pieces and the whole
Yeah.
works. All of that's called appearances. And so this is this thing I think that the Vajrasattva can do where the appearances stay there, but we don't grasp at them or believe in them. They
No.
don't dominate our reality 100%
Yeah.
anymore. So there's the exhaustion, there's dread. I was also thinking about hurt, similar thing that happens when we have when we get hurt physically or emotionally, you know, usually it's completely overwhelming, but we're not our feelings, even though when we're completely overwhelmed by our feelings, that's why hurt and attachment are often painted as a flood because they overwhelm everything. So whenever we get hurt, it has a direct line to attachment. It reveals our attachment. Because most of the time, you know, we think everything is fine until something goes wrong. You think about it. That's not understanding samsara. No, everything's temporarily fine if you're lucky, but by nature, it's going to go wrong. And how do we know that? It's only when something goes wrong. We go bang and we get hurt and we start crying and we go, oh no. And that actually reveals the nature of it to us, the nature of suffering. And so that one can directly lead us to Vajrasattva as well, because it's not even the suffering or the hurt that we're seeking a refuge from. It's this all-pervasive, compounded suffering that we have because we have this contaminated body and mind. So then I thought, oh, okay, what about something mentally that's a good thing? We've gone through the terrible things, and I was thinking about joy or joyousness, for instance. I've just seen, oh, there's some really nice quotes from you guys in the chat. I was going to read those out. So, Francesca, I was lucky enough to have menopause twice, once in my 30s from surgically induced, and then again in my 50s. Now that I'm nearing 70 this year, the need for purification right there for me, which is why I do Vajrasattva with prostrations, 35 Buddha practice. Rosemary, that's what Mike Tyson said so wisely. Everyone has a plan until they get hit in the face. You know what? I wrote that quote down tonight, Rosemary, because that's exactly how we think. Samsara is fine. We've got a plan until bam, samsara reveals its nature to us. So Tyson, I love that guy. You know, it gives me a lot of hope because he's come out around from all of this background and then getting everything so spectacularly wrong to actually being this really witty, humble fella. Okay, so the last one about joy. So I was thinking about when we experience, you know, like when I go to a concert, I like going to a concert, listening to music makes me happy, but I have this nagging feeling of all the way through and afterwards, like, what's the point? Like, it's good, but what's it for?
When you're at the concert,
Yeah.
when it's actually happening.
Yeah, when it's actually happening. I'm like, what's it for? Like, you just have a nice concert and then you die. Like, why? What is the point? I just don't think it's worth all that effort, even though I really, music's what gives me life. I can't actually enjoy it unless I can find a purpose for it. And so I have a purpose. I do really good Vajrasattva meditation at concerts. And I have a purpose to be able to get colored back in again so I can be a decent human being to other people. But if I didn't put it together like that and it was just like a fun thing to do, I'm bored with fun. I really couldn't be bothered. I'd much rather do something that's challenging or that solves a problem. And so then I was thinking about, okay, so when do I feel really good that I don't have that kind of crisis of what's it for? That deep nagging, like, is that all there is kind of thing. And that's when if I lead a really good class or a really good puja, That just keeps me happy for days, even when I feel bad, even when I'm exhausted. So again, just when we're having a good time, joy, enjoyments, they aren't how they appear either. And in fact, when you think about it karmically, it can be quite terrifying because all of those enjoyments are a result of all of our good karma, all of the hard work we've put in, and now we're experiencing the result, and then it will be gone. So, is that what I want to do with all of my good karma? Is just like piss it up against the wall? No, we want to do something with it. Otherwise, it's just wasted on hedonism. Anyway, that's my riffing on a theme. Francesca says, I get a lot of solace from my connection to Dharma when I'm scared at night. My friends Tara and Vajrasattva are with me. And like Mandy was saying, Vajrasattva's become her buddy. And I feel like that too. I feel like Tara's like an auntie or a grandmother that loves you, even though you're a naughty kid. Because she's looked after me even when I was hopeless.